Welcome to Exponential Trust Times, the unique AI channel of trust that creates bridges between AI expert and tech enthusiast. I'm Dr. Lubna Kari, Executive AI Business Leader and Digital Transformer at Fortune 500 and CAC40 for more than two decades, and the President of AI Exponential Thinker. Within our innovative concept, Share the Stage, we received a question from the audience to offer a fair opportunity to connect and meet personally our guests. So let's listen to our guest in this special moment of authenticity. Humanize AI is a unique fair opportunity to raise various perspectives about artificial intelligence and the mysterious unknown future in times of exponential technology. And today, my guest is Sarah Evangeline Norman, the data leader at TikTok. And before that, she led app analytics for Google. She's also served as the senior advisor to digital for Kamala Harris' 2020 presidential campaign. And I know I took some part of your biography, Sarah. So we will talk about all the aspects later. Welcome, Sarah, to the show and with our audience.
Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it. I'm a big fan.
It's a great pleasure. So, Sarah, in this show, Humanize AI, we have like couple stages. So we will move from one stage to another, and each stage we will address a separate topic, right? But before that, the first stage, it's mainly to know more about you and about your authentic journey. This is the case. You will explain it much more than my words. And you have a fantastic journey between various universes, whether as a data leader, data storyteller as well at TikTok, right? And insight leader at Google and recognized a democratic strategic by multiple shows like Fox and Newsmax, a liberal voice, as you say it very well. So how was the journey so far, Sarah? And can you share with us, with our audience, at least three magic or tough moments that let you be where you are today?
Yes, thank you so much. So I'm a data storyteller. So yes, I work in analytical sales at TikTok. I work with Fortune 50 companies. And separately, you will sometimes see me on the news, particularly conservative news, representing the liberal point of view. And sometimes when I meet people, they're like, what? How did those two things go together? But to me, they make a lot of sense because at the end of the day, it's all data storytelling. I take complex sets of data and I translate it into easy to understand, persuasive stories. And yes, you'll also see me on they rebranded to Section School, teaching data and data storytelling. And I am a senior fellow to Wharton Analytics. But the fun part for me is that I get to do the analytical thing and I also get to do politics and completely separately. You know, my day job has nothing to do with my personality on TV. But both of these things, the story that I have that elevated my career was by doing something for someone else. I would not have done this for myself. And what I mean by that is I was in my mid-20s and I had a boyfriend, now my ex-boyfriend. And I was working at Google at the time and I was so excited to go to work every day. You know, like I felt energized. I felt like I had interesting things to work on. And he was really, really painfully smart, but he was never excited to go to work. You know, it always was a chore to him. And we had a conversation one night about what would it take for him to be excited to go to work. And he told me that the only thing that he sees himself being really passionate about is progressive politics. And at the time, you know, I was fully in data and sales, but not in politics, though it was a shared interest of ours. And I wanted to do everything I could for him to have the opportunity to get into progressive politics. And so that being said, the only thing I could think of was to like go to things like meetups in New York City for people that are interested in politics. And he rolled his eyes at me. He refused to come. He said it was silly and wasn't going to lead anywhere. And from there, I met these women and I did a presentation for them and ended up doing some things for the DNC and other political campaigns until finally I wound it up as the liberal on conservative news. And at the same time, doing those wider projects for politics, you know, not just applying data to Fortune 50 companies.
Yeah.
It helped my data career because I started to be seen as someone who can widely adapt these data stories and data techniques. But honestly, I have him to thank because I would not have done it without him. And the thing that I want anyone who cares about this to take away is I, at the time, never would have done that for myself. And I did it only because I wanted this person who I loved at the time to be happier. And honestly, I wanted the same things. And yes, it happened to work out for me as I was trying to get it for him. And I actually showed up and it worked out for me. But at the age of 26, 27, I did not care about myself that much to do that kind of work. And I am so grateful that by doing it for him, yes, I happened to be doing it for myself at the same time, but that was completely lucky.
But it's, you know, when I follow your story, and we met before, like it's really an authentic journey because working on data, generally we work much more for company as you do today, right? And for a couple of years, actually, it's not today only. But how can you reach the side of the politics? And your story is really unique. How you reach that in order to, you know, as you explain it, to support someone else and you know, to make him more excited as he it's a part of his, let's say, dream or something like that. So it's really unique to have this kind of authentic journey, and it's very interesting how you can leverage it as well, whether for a company, Fortune 500, but also for the society. This is what you are doing because you are doing it in both sides. And it's very interesting how you reach the both sides with the same, let's say, background, competences, skills, and so on, right?
Thank you. Yeah, no, it's true. I honestly, even more than skills, I mean, I had to be honest, I got incredibly lucky multiple times, but the thing that I try to remind myself now as I have more confidence, and frankly, I'm now in my, you know, mid-30s, and I'm just an overall happier person who will go out for what I want. But the other side of that is, while I didn't care enough about myself to go out and do these things, I cared too much about what other people thought. And it was actually going my first time on Fox News. And again, I'm on, you know, I'm a liberal voice on a largely conservative place. And someone like was tagging my brother and my mom on Twitter and posting on all these sites. My name's Sarah Evangeline. And they started calling me Sarah Evil. And there was a big room, like, thousands of people saw this tweet that said that I gave oral sex to someone in a city that I'd never been to at a bar. And it was almost funny, you know, and it was in that moment where I realized, you know, these people that do that, not only do I not have much respect for them, but they're going to think what they think. And then after they post it, they're not going to think about you. Yes. So I was too embarrassed to go out there because of what people thought. And I didn't care about myself enough to do it. And I'm just so lucky that I stumbled upon these situations, including, like, yes, I worked on my data skills and my communication skills. And I did work hard, but it would not have, none of this would have happened without a lot of luck for sure.
Important. Now I have a small questions that came from my team when we prepared this episode. They are excited to know if there is one moment you are so lucky you met Kamala Harris, right? The vice president of United States. What was one moment that it remained in your mind? At least one moment. I know that it's tricky,
yeah.
right?
So I would say the dumbest luck one moment that I had in my career was I was after Harris dropped out of the presidential campaign in December 2019, I started volunteering for different Democratic orgs. And what I was doing is I was calling potential donors and saying, hey, we really need to invest in data, and here's how much money we need to do it, go Democrats. And one of them happened to be a news producer, and she invited me on her show, and she asked me to talk about polls. And then from there, a conservative show invited me on, and I thought, okay, I can talk about math. I can explain polls. That's my job. And then after the commercial break, usually you go on, you do your spiel, and then on commercial break, they thank you, you hang up. But instead of hanging up, they said, can you hold on for one more segment? And I thought that I was going to talk more about the polls, but then they bring this co former congressman on, now former congressman on, named David Allen Bratt, who, if you're familiar with the Liberty Scale, it's the Tea Party scale to rate members of Congress. So a really conservative, popular among super conservatives. And he was one of two congressmen to ever get a perfect score on the Liberty Scale. And I'm not saying what I'm about to say, I'm not saying this because he's conservative. I am saying this because he was straight up lying. He was spewing misinformation. And I was so taken aback that I was honestly confused by what he was saying. And I just responded with data. And I didn't get mad at him. I honestly felt like, oh my God, this man is so scared. And it just felt like, no, as a human, let's talk this through. And so I responded calmly but definitively. And apparently that went pretty well. And from there, I was invited onto different news stations, but I made sure to prioritize the conservative ones because for me, as Democratic strategist, obviously I'm towards the left, and I didn't quite see the point of going on left and centralist news stations. They hear enough from people who think just like me. But it started going really well, and I became a regular on Fox News and Fox News Business, or excuse me, Fox
Amazing.
Business. Yeah.
Amazing.
Thank you.
Amazing. Now, Sarah, we have the second stage, name it the magic of technology. And you start talking a little bit about data. Let's dig in, right? Data is a mainstream, right? And we are curious to know how you turn data into insight and what, let's say, what kind of blockers can be faced in such journey.
So I love that question. My first thing to note is I think people overestimate how many things count as an insight. So I think they're looking for a lot of times when you go into the data, you're like looking for anything that's growing and anything that's changing over time and what's shifting. And someone might say, oh, people are using their mobile phones more. Well, that's really obvious. That's not really an insight. An insight has to be not obvious. It has to be actionable, like something you can do about it, and it has to be measurable. So if you action off of this insight, you can measure progress. And so the first challenge, especially when I work with people newer to the field, is honestly really curating what you think is an insight. If it's not those three things, don't put it out there. And so I want everyone to curate what their insights are to be more impactful. But the other big blockers are there's a real dichotomy of how people think about how powerful data is. There's a group of people that think data can solve everything, but a lot of things we don't have data on, so yeah, right? We don't collect data on everything. For example, I was working with a state and they were like, why are people not signing up for benefits? And I was like, we would have to ask them. We'd have to get the survey out there. We don't know why someone isn't visiting your website, or when they do, they click off really shortly. On the other hand, there's a lot of people who don't understand the value of data. So we have like an overtrust in data and then a lack of understanding the power of data, and so you kind of don't really use it. And so a lot of times when I work with C-levels, many of them will say, oh yeah, no, I know, data, it's the new thing. If we don't use it, we're falling, sorry, I know my camera just went blurry. If we don't use it, we're falling behind. And they say that, and I think that they often mean it. But at the end of the day, they're just looking for data that backs what they're already doing. And so I, in that situation, have to find the C-level who's an advocate, someone who doesn't just want me to back up the story they already have in their minds. And I don't think people are consciously doing that, but I think finding that person that understands that to really listen to the data, you have to take note of this. And the last big challenge is, hey, regulation's a really hot topic and we need to be regulated. You know, I saw that Grindr was selling data that Christian groups were buying to track gay priests. That is a violation. That is data assault. And so these things are absolutely important, but finding the line needs to be clearly written. And a lot of the times, you know, we want to be as safe as we can be. So we will look at data that could potentially help solve big problems, you know, healthcare. We could look at data that, you know, what people are searching for online to predict out, oh, they're searching for knee pain it a lot in this area, a lot of back pain searches. That might be the area of the next opioid epidemic. You know, like there's things that we may not be looking at because we want to be ultra safe. And I think we really need to find that guideline.
You know, you mentioned a couple of points, very important points that, I mean, every company need to care about when they use data. And last week I was invited in a panel talking about AI strategy in Africa. And you mentioned some point at the beginning when you are talking about collecting data. You know, a lot of country, even not even company, but country are not collecting their data. So they are not even able to, you know, monetize this data or use this data or extract those insights, right? So it's very important to start by collecting this data, as you said, and then also think about the actionable aspects and for sure measure, because we are in company. So we need to measure, you know, this is our daily life. But it's very important to care about those important points when you have to work on data. And there's another point also, it's about culture. I think company, I mean, you said it's not by, I mean, from my understanding, you said like some of the people on the company, let's say collaborators, will not do it by purpose, but they are not aware about the value of their data, right? And they need the support, the guidance to understand where is the value in this data and should we use all the data or not? This is another, you know, I think you have a point on that, right?
Thank you. And for me, because, you know, I think every citizen has to answer the question of what line am I okay with? Because any powerful tool has to be regulated, right? And for me, where I have landed is if the information is not personally identifiable, I'm okay with it. That's just me. But the problem is that, you know, in general, at least in the States, I know that there's some countries like Estonia who has done a lot into data literacy. We have not armed our citizens both with the ability to fully understand how their data is being used, and also to understand when it's being misused, and misused both in terms of the crossing a line of privacy, but also selecting data that just backs your story. You know, people think like all stats are true. Well, if I just, you know, look at this one little zip code of data and ignore worldwide data, I could tell any story I want, right? And so I think we need to educate the public both on the limitations and the power of data.
Perfectly said. Yes, both sides, it's very important. We have in these sections and stage of the magic of technology, we have a bonus. and it's like a couple sub questions. And we are living in an exponential technology era, Sarah, and we are living together in this and working on, right, in this era. Is there any technology or, let's say, tech news that retain your attention these last weeks and months?
Yeah, you know, I've been focusing a lot on data literacy, which is the ability to read, use, and understand data and to be able to communicate data. And there's a couple of figures that keep me up at night. So, for example, I think that the exact stat was 85% of C-level executives believe that being data literate is as vital in the future as being able to use a computer is today. At the same time, only 11% of employees believe they are data literate. Forbes a few months ago said that data literacy is the most valuable, is the second most valuable skill to have over the next 10 years, only behind digital literacy. And so, yes, you know, there's other things that are rattling my mind. Like, I'm very interested in the Hollywood writer story. I think that is a fascinating thing. But to me, AI and separately the use of data or being the people who actually can use AI, et cetera, it's going to touch every industry. It's going to. And I think right now the writers are one that, you know, it seems especially appalling to me. They need to be paid for their work. But separately, we're going to hear more and more cases like that. And I think what's important is that we need to educate our citizens so that we can find the line of, hey, where is it? If you're having AI create scripts off of someone's work, who owns that? You know, and having more people understand how that works and how data and AI are used, I think is the only way to solve it for every industry, because we're just going to keep seeing it.
Right. And I think I'm fully aligned with that, because today, as we said, data is everywhere, right? And yeah. we have, you know, to exploit this data, right, in the right way, with trust, with responsibility, for sure. But we have to exploit it, because we can. It can help us for health issue, you know, for production issue, for efficiency issue, you know, for a lot of aspects, for human right as well. And this is very important, to use data also for the society, because it will help us too much solve a lot of issue. And actually, just between, since it's a new topic, but we are thinking about how can we leverage those startups, right, that they are working on everything around human rights, raising female voices, you know, having more equality and equity for everyone. It's very important that we use data also, you know, to reach those targets that hopefully, and I'm sure that we are able to reach it by using data. I'm sure, because it's like, you know, it's the light. Data is the light. If we have it, you know, and we use it, we will see the path, right? So it's very important to use it, and you are working on that. Sarah, we have another stage, name it mentoring at scale. So as a strategist, you are often invited by media like Fox News, and we start talking a little bit about that, to share your analysis. Let's say in the context or the space of political space, let's say it. And now the question is, from your experiences and especially also your role as tenure fellow at Wharton, I'm so curious to know more about that as well. How can young generation improve their communication skills? And if there is like a kind of masterclass that you would offer at scale, what will be the content?
So I, full disclosure, I do teach on Section 4. So a lot of my dream content is on there. But really, if I were going to create a master class series, I would want to add a couple of things. So what I have on Section 4 is how to mine data for insights, and then separately data storytelling. And I'm building a few more things. But I think that between section school and my work at Wharton with working with MBA students, the first thing that I see is that students aren't aware of why they need to be able to communicate super well. And so I take the time to give them that background. You can be the best data person ever, but if you can't communicate it like a human, like you're not going to get very far. At least you're not going to be able to transform yourself from a data analyst. Like you're not going to climb the C-suites and so on. And two, I don't think that they're aware of how many fields there are. So I was talking to some MBA students and separately some computer science students, and they really saw it as like a narrow ladder up this data field. And really, data and particularly data storytelling, turning data into these really simple stories that people can understand and take action off of. That is not necessarily a linear career. You can really apply that anywhere. So for me, like, and sorry to just talk about me here, but it's the experience I know. Yes, I worked at Google. I'm working at TikTok. I'm launching an org there. Separately, yes, I go when I talk on the news, and that doesn't seem like a data person, but I know how to turn data into stories, right? And so, taking a step back and opening them to how you can really apply it to the field, like I would want to do how to turn your data into arguments, or I think that it's really widely applicable. And I think that if I'm going to make a prediction, yes, I call myself a data storyteller. My bet is in the next 10 years, universities are making this a major. I think that this is going to be a new, widely respected field. And yes, I know I'm one of the few people calling myself a data storyteller. So I know that's a little bit self-fulfilling, right? Like I'm hoping for it. I'm a little biased here. But as a data storyteller, I do think that in the next 10 years, it's going to become a standard college major. I think that it is going to be something that you see in a lot of job descriptions. And so I myself came from the analytical side of things. It's like I'm a math girl at heart, but I did the uncomfortable thing of teaching myself how to communicate. I read books. I read so many books. And I have, it explains a complicated data topic, but I have given this actually to more non-data people than data people. Not because I want them to understand. Sorry?
Just show it again to the
Oh, yeah.
camera. Perfect.
It's converted
Converted.
by
Great,
Neil
great.
Coyne. And it's not so much like, yes, I do think this is a great topic to understand, but it's not so much that I wanted these people to understand deeply the topic that he's covering. I wanted them to notice how he breaks down a complicated topic in a way that C-levels both have the ability to understand and the time to understand. And how throughout the book, not only is he explaining beautifully and funny, like it honestly, I know I'm so nerdy, but this is an entertaining read. And he also reverts back to action. So what does this mean? I think that too often do people focus on, especially if you're a data nerd like me, you really want to show, oh, like look at the statistical analysis, look how I did this causal impact, and like, oh, look at this chart. And the thing is yes, that makes you look really smart, but it doesn't make it you convincing. It doesn't make you persuade people if you're just showing up, right? And so, like, do you want to be look really smart and nerdy, or do you want to be convincing and powerful? You have to curate yourself, and that is something that I think right now most classes cannot cover. They do not cover. You need people in the field, and I would very much like to change that. That's what I would focus on.
Sarah, like I lead in teams like working on different profiles on data from data analysts, let's say, to data scientists, right? And machine learning engineers and so on. But having some people with those capability of data storytelling, as you said, it's very tough to find them, right? It's much more they gain it by experience. From my experience, I saw much more people's gain it by experience through the years, but not as a data analyst able to, have these outcomes and have this right arguments, the storytelling behind that, and go and and talk about those outcomes in the right way to convince, for sure. It's mainly about experience. From what I see so far, it's mainly from experience. So it's very important that firstly you name yourself data storyteller, and it's true. When you have to push something, we have to use it at least in order to educate people, and start creating the awareness about this new type of profiles, maybe, or at least competency and skills that we need to acquire in the coming years. And I think we have to start from now. So it's very important that you firstly give this course, which is amazing, and push the society and the other education institutions to have such courses as well. So the stage four, it's about key figures. As you know, we use data in order to have those measurements, right? And use them, KPI and so on, right? So that's why we created a topic, named it key figures, because we are curious to know from your experience, because you have an amazing talk, and I invite everyone to go and probably we'll share the link with the podcast. Name it "Let Your Data Do Talking." I love the title, and the team enjoy the content. And I think you are a strong believer on the power of data for company, and you show it is but in our discussions today. I think it's very important that people start developing this critical thinking, because data will help, but we need to have the right perception, right, based on this data, and we need to analyze across all the contexts, right, to use the right data in the right way and understand it with the right lenses, which is very hard when it comes to mainly society. I'm not talking about company, because it's company, we have like several separate contexts, and it's more specific, right? But when it comes to the society and the citizens, it's much more broader. And it's very, it's a complex task, let's say, to try to have this right interpretation, let's say, understanding of this data, when you have some peoples, for instance, that you will take just few lenses to analyze it or show it, or let's say share it, right? Because people will follow and will believe on that, which is not for sure true for all the cases, let's say.
100%. And you're right. It would be challenging, but other countries have done it. Like Estonia, who is a constant target of Russian propaganda. I think it was back in maybe 2007, but a while back, they, realized, just as you said, that critical thinking is actually core to national security, because without it, you could be easily manipulated by Russian propaganda. And this country of like a million and a half people really prioritize it. And the thing that they prioritize most, or at least the one that stood out to me, is data literacy. And the way that they did that is they incorporated, just as they incorporated all these critical thinking skills, they taught data literacy along in the normal statistics class. If you understand how to use data, you understand how you may be lied to by data. And Estonia, born out of a need to protect themselves from Russian propaganda, has changed their education system to help their citizens be prepared. And also, as we know, it also helps prepare them for the workforce, which is a whole other factor of national security. But it can be done. We have seen this be done. We just have to do it. And so those are the numbers that really keep me up at night, that 85% of C-level execs say that this is as important as using a computer, and only 11% of us think that we can do it. That's alarming. That's a national security concern on its own.
Very, very good point, and I agree, that's alarming, and I think this is what we have to amplify the efforts, right, to bring much more culture, data cultures, to everyone, and it's very important. The five stage, Sarah, I'm saying Sarah with the French accent. Every time I say Sarah, it's like I feel like I'm talking in French.
I love it. I love it. Please always say it that
Thank you. So the stage five, it's a Chinese portrait. We want to finish the episode, the show, in a light way, right? We talk a lot about data storytelling. We talk about the major points that we have to focus, the importance of data cultures for citizens, and we talk a lot about those aspects from different perspective. Let's say, let's finish by five quick questions to know more about you. So the first
Thank
question is, if you are a book, you will be?
you. Data-backed
Every time I say, you know, in the show, I say quick questions, and I will stop in all questions to understand, because I'm the voice of the audience, right? And I know a lot of people will be curious why this book.
baddie. So I am actually writing a book completely separately from data. It's a political book, but if it were going to be like the book of my life, it would be Data-Backed Baddie, because I hope the term baddie is general, but badass, brave, and what makes me comfortable being a liberal on conservative news, talking on a place where people are very likely to disagree with me when I walk in. The thing that gives me confidence is being backed by data. I trust my math, and that is really freeing. So I'd like
Great.
my book to be Data-Backed
Okay, great. Question two. If you are a movie, you will be?
Baddie. Ooh, can the movie be Data-Backed Baddie? I'm gonna go with that as the theme. Or liberal on conservative news. And really, you know what? It's too nerdy to say. I was going to go into some data movies. Ignore me.
Okay. Question three, if you are someone from the history, you will be.
Ooh. So I have this fantasy, like if I were going to snap my fingers, I want to be the Anthony Bourdain of politics. So I want to go to different countries, like one country an episode, to learn how people are elected there, how it impacts life. Like, hey, there's a king in Thailand, and here's how German parliament's elected and how it impacts daily life. So I would like to be the Anthony Bourdain of politics.
Great.
Thank
Question
you.
four. If you are a famous monument, you will be.
The first thing that came to my mind was to have a sandwich named after me at my local deli. I know exactly what the sandwich would be, but I should probably go with having a university building with my name on it that is dedicated to data storytelling or data literacy.
Amazing. I love the
I
confidence. Go ahead, girls.
want that sandwich.
And the question five, if you are a hashtag, you will be.
Ooh, okay, we got data-backed baddie, data storyteller, and liberal on conservative news. I'll take any.
Okay. As a
Thanks.
conclusion, the last stage, Sarah, is named Chair the Stage. Okay. And the name of Chair the Stage is created because we want to democratize AI data, all the space of trust technology, right? And that's why we created Chair the Stage, when all our podcast previously was, let's say, we invited one or two people from the audience. And we give a lot of questions and so on. So we keep this in this show in order to know much more at the conclusion, at the end of this unique discussions, and let's say authentic one. The floor is yours if you want to share some biggest achievements so far, your next dream. The floor is yours.
Thank you. So the thing that makes me really joyous and motivated is when there's any hint that I actually extended an olive branch to someone and they took it, particularly like in the US, we are so freaking divided. Like, honestly, it's toxic no matter who's right or wrong. And so when I go on conservative news, my maybe naive goal is to convince a few people, is to at least have them consider this liberal idea. And what I get a lot of DMs, yes, a lot of like hate mail, don't get me wrong, But a lot of DMs saying like, hey, can you cite your sources? Or hey, I've never thought about that. Or what about this? And the one that really stood out is we were talking about immigration efforts. And I always get a mix of DMs. And I always, you know, take it as a sort of cue of how effective was I? And after the immigration one, I was flooded with open-ended questions, thoughts. And so that is what I'm most proud of. And it really got me thinking, you know, what I'm really passionate about is sort of connecting people through a different way of thinking about things. And so, yes, I'm a liberal, but I like to take a step back. Like I identify as a liberal, but I don't automatically just agree with liberal policies. I try to look at the data and I happen to usually land on what is considered liberal. And I think that a lot of times I look at other countries, for example, to do that. And so my long-term vision is I want a show where I am the Anthony Bourdain of politics, looking at how other countries do it. But really, my goal is if I can have just like a tiny little bit of influence over us, you know, hating each other less and being a little bit more open to new ideas, that to me is a huge win. And honestly, it sounds like it has nothing to do with data, but for me, data is my only tool to really do that. And by the way, thank you so much. I think you're a beautiful person in every way. I'm so glad you're working on this.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Sarah. And you said data is the, I think data is the best way, right, to materialize these words and bring a sense to everyone.
Yeah.
And I think you explain it in multiple way today in the show, Humanize AI. And I love what you said before. And we keep following you, right? And I invite everyone to listen to your talk again, because it's a very interesting one. The masterclass also good points. I think it's something that we will push. And I'm sure that I will share that, because it's very important that we create the new education system, right? And the future of education. So that's why it's very important to take those idea, relevant idea about new courses to help the citizens and, you know, the young generation find a good opportunity for the future. Thank you very much, Sarah. It was a
Thank
great
you.
Pleasure to have you with us.